Good morning, this is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the December 15th, 2022 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is also being provided telephonically for access by the public. PJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information in this meeting.
Good morning, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff participating telephonically in the meeting, all callers will be muted during the call. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask telephone participants to please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers speaking. All members of the Board of Commissioners are appearing in person this morning in keeping with the Rhode Island Open Meetings Act. Members of the public may also access the meeting via teleconference or attend in person according to their preference. If the teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting so audio can be restored. Commissioners, please note that we'll generally be voting by voice vote this morning, but the rules for closed sessions will require us to take a few roll call votes coming in and out of the executive session. Vice Chairman Thorson will preside at this morning's meeting. Meeting participants, please do state your name each and every time prior to speaking. And with that, I will turn it over to the Vice Chairman to call this to order.
Thank you, Corinne. I'm Jim Thorson, and I'd like to call this meeting to order. Current time is marked at 9:33 a.m. Carol, would you please conduct a roll call attendance of the board in attendance and have some staff.
Commissioner McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Orr.
Here.
Acting Chairman Thorson.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Burns.
Okay.
Commissioner Designee Cabral.
Yes.
Commissioner Stahl.
Here.
Another form.
Thank you, Carol. Jim Thorson. And we have an ambitious agenda today, so I'd like to introduce board action number one, which is approval of the minutes of the Board of Commissioners meeting held on November 18th, 2022. Can I have a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve, Commissioner.
I see McAllister motions. Do I have a second?
Second motion.
John Stahl, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it. That brings us to agenda item number two. This is Jim Thorson again, the presiding commissioner's report or remarks. So I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge publicly that we have quite a situation going on at the State House, as many of you are aware of in press reports. What has not been reported and you are likely not aware of, and I want to acknowledge publicly, is the courageous action by a number of staff at the Department of Capital Asset Management and Maintenance. These folks have worked day and night and weekends without fanfare to clean up and transport folks back and forth to shelter space, and have done so without complaint. And I just wanted to acknowledge that publicly because that story has not been told at all. These are difficult conditions for them. And so I just wanted to thank them publicly. So with that, I'd like to change the tone a little bit and talk about something a little more pleasant, which is to acknowledge the efforts and the work that Leanne has done over the last 7 years. Leanne has worked on this board for how many years now, Leanne?
3.5.
3.5 years. And seen quite a few changes. And I just wanted the board to congratulate and acknowledge and thank her for the work that she's done. She's always come prepared, asking intelligent questions, making thoughtful comments, and taking copious notes. So on behalf of the board, I'd like to thank you.
Okay.
Do we have?
We do. Thank you everyone for the agency and the work that we do. So we have back to you. And thank you to the gentleman for the organization. Before then, we had another map with him.
So how about a round of applause for you? So that brings us to board action number three. Jim Thorson again for asking for approval of extension and amendment of the revolving construction loan for the swap and stop leasing abandoned property. On behalf of this board item, we are having Ann Berman's event, our Director of Real Estate Development. Ann?
Good morning. Thank you. This is Ann Berman. This is a request to extend an existing revolving construction loan for an additional 26 months on an official line from $2 to $2.5 million for SWAP, who, as we all know, is a seasoned nonprofit developer in Providence. SWAP uses the master construction loan to develop single-family and two-family homes for first-time home buyers in Providence, as well as other communities. Rhode Island Housing and SWAP completed the first master construction loan in 1999, and we have maintained that lending relationship since then. The existing agreement was initially approved by this board in February of 2014, and we've extended it twice, most recently in 2019. The current term expires in April of 2023. However, we're not able to make new loans within the last 6 months of the term of the agreement, which is why we're here. So under the current master construction loan, SWAT can complete 14 homes at a time, of which 7 must be pre-sales and 7 are spec and by overview, same under the new line. SWAP has presented an aggressive pipeline of 15 homes that they're seeking to finance over the next year. In addition to the extension and the increase in the loan amount, SWAP has also asked that we modify the maximum income of the home buyers who can buy homes from 115% of the AMI to 120%. Which would be consistent with virtually all of the other funding programs that we work with, such as Building Homes Rhode Island, the Homeownership Investment Fund, as well as the HARP program. While SWAP's preference is actually to target lower income borrowers, that pays more subsidies, and the housing is expensive. So they'd like the ability to go up to the 120%. So we are seeking approval of an extension, a three-year extension of the loan, an increase in the line to $2.5 million, and an amendment to increase the income limits of the home buyers. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ann. It's Jim Thorson again. I'm going to ask for a motion, and then we'll take discussion.
So moved.
Kevin? Do I have a second?
Second, Mr. Keith.
Keith, seconded. Okay. How about questions and comments?
So I have a Josh question. Are all these homeownership projects sold at a specific discount to market?
Typically, yes.
And is that a requirement?
It is not a requirement that it be a discount to market. It's just, again, when they're trying to get to 80% or 100% of AMI, it's a significant discount to market. Right? If they're at 120%, it's a slightly lower discount to market.
120%, though, is usually
120% of AMI for the home buyer.
There's still the discount to market for South Providence.
Yes.
Okay. I think that's important because we, with whatever tools we have, so the state is a quasi, we want to leverage that to provide homeownership opportunities that otherwise wouldn't be available on the market, so this sounds like a great program. And just on a follow-up to that, though, what's the purpose of increasing it from 115% to 120% AMI?
So there are virtually all of these projects require some sort of gap financing, and typically for home ownership, there are limited sources, but the ones that we use are Building Homes Rhode Island, HARP, and well as a program that we've self-funded called the Homeownership Investment Fund, and all of those allow buyers up to 120% of AMI. So it's just a way to sync all of the funding programs together.
I think historically, this is Carol Ventura. Josh, I think historically we've seen SWAP do business in
South Providence targeting 80% of AMI. They've expanded a bit, which is a good thing for Skylanders. Now they're doing this in both Barrington and down in South County, and I think there's an opportunity to lower the subsidy amount while still creating affordable opportunities at 120% of AMI, and these units also count as part of the municipal inventory of affordable units, so it just gives them a little bit more flexibility. It doesn't mean they're going to go all the way to 120.
Yeah, that's really helpful, because yeah. As I said, we want to be providing a discounted market, and that's very different in South Providence than it might be in Barrington, Greenwich.
Yeah.
So the policy decisions inherent in how we design our program, even though they might seem just like program guidelines and regulations, really have an impact on how we're carrying out policy goals from the state, including using soft debt from whether it's been an obligation bond or ARP or other sources of funding. So that's really helpful clarification.
Kevin, it's Jim Thorson. I was going to ask if the president had reviewed this and what your
thoughts. We did. Thank you, Jim. It's a long-standing program. Very well established and successful nonprofit. It's a fantastic overall program. We have limited relationships as a construction lender, heavily dependent on permanent subsidies in place. Great if there were more subsidies and we could do more of this type of lending. So we were very much in favor of supporting it.
Thank you, Jim. And is the 115 and 120 enough? Is that going to?
Yes, it does. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, well, we have a motion and a second. Does anybody else have any more questions? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you. And we will move on to Tim Thorson again. We'll move on to board action number 4. And this is firm approval of acquisition financing for Dakota Properties, Inc. in Westerly. And you're up again.
Thank you. This is Ann Berman. So this RFA is for firm approval of the taxable loan in an amount not to exceed $800,000 for the acquisition of land that will facilitate the development of 72 units in Westerly. The developer is Dakota Properties. This piece of property is at the corner of Route 1 and Franklin Street in Westerly, so it's very well positioned for affordable housing. Dakota has entered into a purchase and sale to purchase the property, which is about 7.5 acres. Under the agreement, the purchase price is 1.4. However, if the developer can close by the end of this month, the purchase price is reduced to $1 million, which is the impetus for this request. They are proposing to build 72 units, a mix of 1, 2, and 3, of which 57 would be a 15 market rate. Interestingly, the property was previously granted master plan approval for 53 units by a different developer. However, that proposal never moved forward. We have spoken to the town, and the town has been quite supportive of the increase to 7 acres. And they are scheduled for December and January hearings for combined master and preliminary approval for the site. The terms of the acquisition loan are outlined in the action. The loan is limited to the lesser of 80% of the purchase price or the appraised value. We did just receive the appraised value, and it is actually higher than $1 million. So we have very good coverage there. So we're asking for firm approval of an acquisition loan in an amount not to exceed $800,000. Happy to answer any questions.
I'll take a motion and then we'll have discussion. Do I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Steve approves.
I'll second.
Kevin, second. Any questions or comments?
I think this is really important project. Having 57 affordable in Westerly. Again, we're Rhode Island housing, spreading, we're around the entire state. Just really like to highlight that. I think it's really important, especially these days that they made to show them. So I'm excited for this project.
Thanks. I'd like to just add that They are seeking to build 72 units on the site.
Mm-hmm. So even a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like the zoning approval is forthcoming, or the city is supportive to get that. This is a non-recourse loan, is that correct? Okay. Feel like if 80% loan to value, a land cost of less than $15,000 a unit, a good location, and I think it's a good bet for us to take. So we were supportive of this.
Thank you, Kevin. It's Jim Thorsa again. Do I have any comments or further questions? Hearing none. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you. Thank you, Ann. This is a good one. Wish we could replicate that. Which brings us to board action number 5. It's Jim Thorsa, and I'm going to entertain another presentation on the approval of transfer of physical assets for the Project Renaissance in Providence. And once again, we'll have Ann Berman walk us through this board action.
Thank you. So this is an administrative action which we've seen before. This request for action is a little bit different. It has two resolutions. The first is the transfer of the limited partnership interest in a project known as Project Renaissance, and the second is actually approval of the sale of the development in a fee simple arrangement. Project Renaissance is a 30-unit scattered site affordable housing development for families in the Smithfield area of Providence. The initial compliance period expired in 2014, and the end of the 30-year compliance period is 2021. The developer, the name of the development is Goddard Realty Limited Partnership. The general partner is solely owned by Smith Hill Community Development Corporation, and they own 0.01%. The current investor is Enterprise, and Enterprise will withdraw and transfer its partnership interest to Smith Hill. Current property manager is Dimio, who's been with the development since its inception, 20-something years ago. After the transfer of the limited partnership, Smith Hill CDC and its affiliates will own the entire development. Smith Hill CDC has notified Rhode Island Housing as well as other community partners that it will be dissolving itself and selling its assets, including Project Renaissance. So Smith Hill CDC has entered into an agreement to sell the development to Dimio Properties or related Dimio entity. They are a seasoned developer. They've been in Rhode Island for a long time. They've managed actually all of Smith Hill CDC's properties. They are also the co-general partner of another development that they own with Smith Hill CDC. Development division as well as our leased housing has reviewed both of these proposals and determined that really this is the best. These two transfers are the best and most beneficial for the residents as well as for sort of the long-term stability of the development itself. So we're seeking approval of both the transfer of the limited partnership interest and then the subsequent transfer of Project Renaissance to a Dimio-related entity.
Thank you, Ann. It's Jim Thorsa again, and with respect to board action number 5, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve. Motion to approve, do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any comments or questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to introduce Jean Lamb,
okay.
Who is the executive director of Smith Hill CDC, and she's been doing this for a very long time, and Smith Hill has done tremendous work up on Smith Hill, so we will certainly miss Jean and her work and wish her all the best.
I just had a question. This was reviewed in the committee as well. So, can you just advise what the any questions that came up or any recommendations from the credit committee?
Sure. Certainly. I think a CPA is generally a procedural matter. I think this one's a little bit unusual because it involves the dissolution of the development company. But Dimio has been, as Ann mentioned, Dimio has been a manager of the property for a long time. They have a vested interest in the property as well. So I think that they're fully prepared for the transition. I think it will put the property on a good long-term sustainable footing. So I think it was a very good plan put in place by the sponsor. They are, the new owner is assuming the existing loan. Rhode Island Housing Loan on the property, which is current. Don't know of any material issues with the property, so we're supportive of this transaction.
Thank you, Kevin. Do I have any other questions? Okay, this is Jim Thorson. What I'd like to do at this time is to all of it, we already had the motion, right? It seems like a 10 minutes ago. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? It appears the ayes have it. Thank you, board. We are moving on to action item number 6. It's Jim Thorson again. And now we are looking for approval of engagement of a consultant for Rhode Island Continuum of Care Performance Monitoring through the Technical Assistance Collaborative. And with that, we have a presentation from Jessica Mowry, Assistant Director of Leased Housing, who will present Board Action Number 6. Jessica.
Thank you, Jessica Mowry. As you know, Rhode Island Housing First was the collaborative applicant on behalf of the Rhode Island Continuum of Care with respect to funding made available through HUD. In support of this role, Rhode Island Housing seeks to engage a consultant to carry out the annual performance monitoring activities. Those performance monitoring activities include evaluating COC-funded projects for programmatic and fiscal compliance, as well as organizational status. The results of the monitoring activities, along with any recommendations for correcting deficiencies, will be formally communicated to Rhode Island Housing, through the planners, and to the Rhode Island Continuum of Care Board of Directors. If necessary, the process will be supplemented with follow-up training for some or all of the COC programs. In August of 2022, Rhode Island Housing issued a request for a proposal seeking solicitation from qualified consumer firms. Two proposals were received and reviewed by an internal committee. In accordance with the RFP criteria, the committee determined that TAC was the most qualified to carry out the performance monitoring activities. The committee reached this conclusion in large part due to TAC's experienced and knowledgeable staff. Our favorable opinion of their past monitoring, and the COC's opinion of TAC. TAC is a Boston-based nonprofit organization, a primary technical assistance provider for HUD, and has a long history of providing technical assistance in both Rhode Island and across the state. This engagement is expected to last 4 to 6 months, so the budget is not to exceed 75%. Request for action is the removal of the Engaged Technical Assistance Collaborative to assist Rhode Island Housing to conduct performance monitoring services related to the continuum of care.
Thank you, Jessica. I'm going to entertain a motion and then we'll have time for questions.
So, Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
Motion by Leanne, do we have a second? Steve? Okay, Jessica, I actually have a couple of questions. With respect to the performance monitoring, are performance monitoring reports published anywhere?
Yes.
And those, are those on our website?
They are. There's a page on the Rhode Island Housing website that is dedicated to the continuum of care and includes archived data for the last 7 to 8 years, I think. And includes the performance monitoring along with the scores of each project and any deficiencies that were noted.
How are we doing?
We're doing really well, especially if you look back historically at where we were before Rhode Island Housing took over the role of the collaborative applicant. And we made some significant changes. We've invested a lot in technical assistance to support the organizations that do this work. So I would say that, and I'm a little biased, but I would say that I'm very proud of the project.
Other questions, Josh?
And then in terms of the summary, so I have lots of
the cost of this project.
This particular engagement is just about $75,000.
Okay. And that's for about 4 months?
About 6 months.
6 months.
Provided we...
And we utilize training dollars to take the money. Okay.
Yeah. Great. That answers my first question. So are these planning dollars that the Rhode Island Housing receives from HUD, the Assisted Community Care Program for Adamsby? But my second question was if you could just explain a little bit the role of the continuum of care vis-a-vis like the state homelessness program, because this is extremely important, and I'm very happy that we have a consultant on board and that we've really made tremendous progress. With Rhode Island Housing as a collaborative applicant, care.
Yeah, happy to do so. Can I have a few minutes to do this?
Sure.
Yeah. So the continuum of care is an initiative of HUD. It was mandated that each community implement a continuum of care at the local level as part of the HEART Act in 2009. The primary charge of the continuum of care board in each community is as a governance structure. So the responsibility of the board of the continuum of care is to set policies and procedures for how the COC funds should spend, to conduct monitoring and funding decisions. Also, I want to note that this continuum of care funding has a very specific target population. It is for individuals who are chronically homeless, which HUD has a very specific definition for. It is homeless for, there are lots of little details, but overall, just so you understand the time it takes to become chronically homeless, you have to be homeless for up to 1 year consistently, or a period of 1 year and another period of time, like 18 months or something, and you have to have a disability. So this is a very small part of the population. When we talk about homelessness, we sort of tend to lump everyone together, and the experiences and the way we manage homelessness should be much more nuanced than that. So just to give you an example, folks that are considered chronically homeless in Rhode Island, there are 497 maps reported. And the way this gets reported, so the caveat is that homelessness is a very transient population, right? And so the way that this number gets reported is that HUD requires a continuum of care to do what's called an intent house each year. And so we disperse advocates and service providers and administrative folks all throughout the state on one night in January. We look at the number of people in shelters and emergency shelters that night and people living outside, and we assess their chronic homeless status. So on January 26th, the last time we did that count in 2022, there were 497 folks who are currently living in permanent housing that is funded through the continuum of care. From January 1st, 2022 to yesterday, 12/14, I think, there are 921 individuals, which represent 564 households. So very targeted population of folks. The COC has 36 unique projects that are delivered to the community through 13 distinct providers. The COC funding is only allowed to fund rapid rehousing, which is the short-term housing where folks that are less acute bridge to a more permanent subsidy. Permanent supportive housing, which is meant for more vulnerable, acutely impaired people who may need longer-term services and that psychosocial subsidy. And it also is allowed to fund some of the administrative and business operations, but along with management information systems for identity. We also have a youth homeless demonstration program as part of the Continuum of Care umbrella. We tried for 3 years. It is a very competitive funding source. We received it in 2021. It's $3.5 million for 2 years. We are beginning to stand up 11 projects with 8 new partners to address youth homelessness. And then I wanted to touch just a little bit in this conversation about the COC, about the metrics and how we measure performance and then what we do with that. So the reason we heard the action to engage TAC this year is because our historical experience informed us that having a neutral party conduct this kind of assessment was much more valuable to the partners. So we use a consultant annually. The metrics are set by HUD, and they include things like the length of time people are homeless in the system, the number of people who make it to permanent housing and then are discharged to homelessness again. They look at spending, if you spent on your grant, because the goal is to deploy resources to the community. The monitoring that TAC will conduct informs the renewal of project funding. So if in the past we have had projects that were not performing as well, we would reallocate their funding to projects that were performing better. When Rhode Island Housing took over the role of the collaborative applicant, HUD was recapturing over $1 million of its funding a year. They do not recapture $100,000. So that is significant for us. More specific to Rhode Island Housing, are you glad you asked this question? More specific to Rhode Island Housing, we serve as a collaborative applicant. So that means that we coordinate the system's response and the board of directors' wishes to provide policies and procedures that govern this funding, which is now $12 million, soon to be $16 million. When Carol and I first started, it was $5 million.
Just about.
We also are required to conduct the annual monitoring of the Continuum of Care project and to prepare and respond to notices of funding issues by HUD, which is no small feat. We employ a consultant to do that too. It's a very laborious, detailed process. And then we also administer rent contracts, our swaps. So some of those 36 projects, a handful of them this year, what I was having. We administer about $1 million in rental assistance each year, which supports 250 households. One of the nice things about the way we're able to do this at Rhode Island Housing is that we work with folks who can providers who bill Medicaid, so that we can spend all of our dollars on housing people, and we can spend all of Medicaid's dollars on providing services to people in their housing. So, in my opinion, we get a little more bang for our housing costs. In our role addressing homelessness at the Housing Finance Agency, we have a road home subsidy that we have used to house folks who are experiencing homelessness, individuals and families. It's about $1 million a year. We also administer the Section 811 program, which is a project-based rental assistance program. It has 3 target populations. One of them are individuals who are chronically homeless who are also highly risk of Medicaid. We were awarded 150 units in 2016. All 150 of those units are committed, and we have 54 households that are currently supported. We also administer the Neighborhood Opportunities Program. That is an operating subsidy for permanent housing and family housing for folks who are homeless. Since its inception, we have deployed $5.4 million, and we're currently still supporting 687 units. We have been fortunate enough in our role as the Housing Finance Agency to bring to Rhode Island the New Lease Initiative, which opens up capacity among multifamily housing developers to establish a homeless preference for individuals who are homeless. This has allowed folks who are experiencing homelessness to take advantage of already existing housing that they may not have had the privilege or the ability to access in the past. And we also deploy just under $1 million to serve 520 households during the pandemic through the Home Savings Program. Lastly, in our role as an HSA, we support 57 homeless or at risk of homelessness households through the Home Tenant-Based Rental Program. Traditionally, this has been used in Rhode Island as a development subsidy. We reallocated some of it to support individuals experiencing homelessness. And then lastly, in our role as a public housing agency, we are one of two public housing authorities that have a homeless preference for individuals that are unsheltered or in emergency shelter. The other public housing agency is the Pawtucket Housing Authority. We have also implemented the Foster Youth Initiative, which housed and provided housing for voucher subsidies for individuals who are transitioning out of the Department of Children, Youth, and Family Foster Care. We have an application pending for stability vouchers with HUD, which will also target individuals who are experiencing homelessness. And very lastly, the emergency housing voucher program. HUD awarded us 117 vouchers last year. We have leased up 89 individuals, and we have 28 who are currently looking for help. I think it's important to note that with the emergency housing vouchers, we have issued more than 117 vouchers, but when those individuals find an apartment outside of our jurisdiction, they get the lease up there, but then we get to issue another voucher. So our reach and our investment is greater than what we're able to support or than we never get. Do you have any
further questions? Well, this is in response to what you asked at the last meeting, Rich.
Thank you. I'm very glad for
that. And I want to say we're fortunate to have an HSA that is active in addressing homelessness, because a lot of states do not have that. And in many ways, we're one of the few states that does not have a full supportive housing program from the state side, from the HFA side, that provides additional funding. And when we're talking about homelessness, the goal is not just to manage it, but to actually end it. And I look forward to collaborating with Rhode Island Housing to better do that. I also want to just put in a plug on that point in time count that Jessica was referencing. I would invite all the board members to participate in that point in time count. It relies on volunteers. It's only one night. I'm not sure what the hours are here. Where I previously was, it was a fun night from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. followed by a breakfast at a diner. It's extremely important and to recognize that housing is the solution to homelessness and the interconnectedness of these programs to need care at the state for shelter funding and the funding review and construction and preservation of both the HFA and the state work together. So that'll be all life. There's more than enough on that.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Jessica. I would add further that I have been out on the square every day except for Sunday. The last 2 weeks, and to sort of underscore the difficulty with your comment, Jessica, I spoke with 8 people between 8 and 10 on Saturday morning who were on the square. And by the evening, Joey Lindstrom, who works for Josh, had 24 people on the square. So it's really challenging. In my day job, I'm responsible statutorily for
be maintaining the state grounds in good order. It's been very frustrating for me. There's, you know, quite a few stories. Everybody has a story. Some are heartbreaking. Some are dubious. It's really an interesting problem that we're wrestling with, and obviously we need to do more, but it's a challenge. So unless anybody has any other comments, I'd like to take a vote. Are we ready? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? I believe the ayes have it. Thank you very much, Jessica.
Thank you, Jessica.
This brings us to board action number 7, which is an approval to revisions to the employee handbook. And to that is Lisa Priano, COO, who is at board action number 7.
Thank you. Good morning, this is Lisa Priano. I also would like to introduce the board to members of our Rhode Island Housing our director, if you have a director, she joined us in February of this year. This request for action is for board approval of revisions to the county's employee handbook. As a quasi corporation, Rhode Island Housing is subject to the state quasi public corporation accountability and transparency act, called QPAS. This provides standards to boards that provide oversight for quasi public corporations. And the act does require the board to adopt the written personnel policies and procedures, including those pertaining to salaries and the employee and terms of employees. So as a matter of the Ministry of Housekeeping, we did our periodic employee handbook. The last comprehensive update to this handbook was December of 2018, and the board did approve that handbook at that time. Over the past month and a half, staff from HR, executive and legal conducted a comprehensive review of the handbook to address the statutory challenges, consistency with state and federal laws, agency practice, and promote clarity. As a result of this effort, some policies were updated as it changed, as shown in the summary that you have there in section B. A couple of new ones that we added were the teleworking policy for obvious reasons, and we have a policy now on telecom monitoring that was not addressed. We also included the flatline version and the final version of the handbook. I won't go through that in detail, but we are recommending that it includes the tax resolution that is the revised revival employee handbook, substantially in the form that the meeting. And I'm going to answer any questions, and those that I can't, I'll take over the number.
Do I have a motion to approve?
Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
Leanne, motion. Second by Steve. Anyone with comments or questions? Yes,
I have a question. Can you just speak a little bit more about the process you go through to revise this? Like, do you ask staff members? Is it mostly managers that come together and suggest changes? Just
so what we do is, in 2018, we do the last one. We track questions that come up from employees when they don't understand the policy. We try to track any labor laws or changes in labor laws. So we actually keep a document when we're doing tracking over time. And we do make tweaks that we ask the board in 2018 to give them the authority to make changes as needed. So we over time make those changes. And then, of course, we work with the legal department to make sure that we review everything for legal consistency. So most of them are approved over time for clarification, additions, again, as I mentioned, the teleworking policy, something new that comes forward, so you have that. And then we review.
Thank you.
Any
B1, B1
flag changes?
I don't think it was anything to, there were a couple of legal changes that we included. One that we had was, sick benefits. We do allow people to take sick time on day one, they have a new meeting period. So obviously, again, we have people that are sick, you know, after, say, a month or so, but we wouldn't need to change that to so I think what we tried to do is really go into the workplace today and modernize the policy to accommodate that.
Lisa, Jim Thorson, if I'm saying, there's a number of these policies which were summarized, thankfully, in black line, and there's lots of stuff that seems kind of mysterious. Other things, not so much. The hiring of relatives policy has changed. Can you talk a little bit about what the change was there and how that was made?
The change was that we previously had a policy that mothers could not work in without helping, and we thought that if an employee didn't work in the homeownership division and a relative wanted a job in the housing division, we felt that that would prevent people from, potentially good hires from being hired ever
that. Excuse me, but I've been to Alaska for a long time. Often changes there, but he wants to get somebody from us to hire a family member. Please reassure me that that is not the case.
That is not the case.
Thank you.
It's not within the division, but it really prevents the shelter from being fine.
Also, the fraternization was changed.
Yes. That was also to address issues where there was a supervisor and an employee that was reporting to that person. That report that was not allowed, but if people do enter into relationships that are in the organization but completely apart, then that does happen in the workplace when people meet one another in the workplace, but they're not necessarily reporting to one another.
Okay. The recruiting and hiring? They removed the policy that was in 2019, and it's a procedure, not a policy. Correct. Lisa, that's fine. Look, I don't want to waste the board's time on that. Many of these other seem to be technical updates relative to what happened in 2018, including benefits, holiday time, and so forth. One of the things that caught my eye was low rental assistance programs. Please tell me we're not making loans to our employees.
I'll give our employees to speak to that, but there are occasionally where employees will apply to some of our programs, and we want to have a policy to address how those are being handled.
That's right. This is Corinne Meyer speaking. We have a separate policy that provides a little more detail on how we handle issues that arise when employees and their family members wish to take advantage of our products and services. Sometimes we can't allow that to happen either because of the limited nature of the resource or because of the individuals involved in decision-making authority of the affected employee. But other times we're talking about something that's not a limited resource and the eligibility criteria are established in a neutral way, in which case we have safeguards to make sure that family members aren't reviewing other family members' loan applications, that privacy is observed, and that the issue is disclosed and treated in a manner that's neutral with neutral employees.
Okay, I don't know if I have the ability to do this, but I would like to ask we should direct our auditors to check on that, make sure that they square it back so that we can be going to have confidence that we're doing things we're supposed to be doing.
And just to add to what Corey said, we have had that policy in place for many years. We just did some clarifications in general.
Sure. I'm just aware of some ancient history and hope of, but and finally, Lisa, can you talk about the teleworking policy and the changes that were brought in because of hybrid work?
Yes. So previous to COVID, we did not have a teleworking policy at all. I think there were occasions where staff went home because of certain extenuating circumstances that we were on a regular basis with food. So obviously with COVID, when we got home initially, we quickly put a policy in place, but then developed something that was more in line with what the workplace was and what the needs of the employees are. So right now, we do allow employees to work from home a maximum of 3 days a week. Some people prefer to come in, and some folks have jobs that are required to be in the office every day. It is directed by the manager, which is called the central HR director, and we do track some of the employees to know which days are coming into the office. We also formalize, we always had flexible hours for folks, but within a certain time frame, I think it's a similar situation. So we formalize that with home policy, and just basically set up the
parameters for everything. Thank you, Lisa. Jim Thorson speaking. Does anybody else have any questions? We have a motion.
I just have a quick question. One comment is that in reviewing these changes, most of them appear to be beneficial to the employees, and in general, it speaks to, I think, a culture of listening to employee needs and being responsive to those. So thank you for that, and recognizing that without our valued employees, we wouldn't be here. So thank you. And just a question on the healthcare benefits. So if an employee chooses not to take coverage, they get basically a small rebate.
Yes.
But is that, I just want to, can they only do that if they have coverage through the spouse?
Or yes.
Rather than okay.
Thank you, Kevin. Anyone else? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Yeah. Thank you. This and thank you, Ethan. For joining us. Agenda item number 8 is Jim Thorson speaking again, and this is the exciting Executive Director of 2019. Carol, would you please tell us the highlights?
Yes, I will. And you do have a job that should be in front of you. Come on. There we go. Okay, well, first let me start by thanking all of members of the team for tremendous support at the agreement. So thank you for that. I want to thank all of the colleagues at the agency because we are able to celebrate our accomplishments because of their good work and certainly our partners. Everybody today. They do tremendous work out in the community, and they're on the ground. They're building everything that needs to be built, and to find policy around housing. So, some of this may be repetitive because you've probably heard it in my ED report, but our agency highlights, we were awarded the PDN. It's an important award because it is given to us by our employees. Right. So they vote on, various benefits that they have at the agency, what their work-life balance is about, and so it's important to me, and I know it's important to our executive team to hear from our employees about their pleasure in working at this agency. We also were recognized by other housing finance agencies across the country for our work on the ZEOS program, which is the Net Zero Housing and sorts of income legislation that was headed by our Amy Wingo here at the agency. Congratulations to Southside Community Land Trust. We invested $1 million in the property on Broad Street, and they are providing space for farmers who need to sell their produce and also for young entrepreneurs that have startup agencies around providing food within the community. And Crossroads Family Housing, 30 permanent supportive housing units. Part of this was, and this will take some of you back, part of this portfolio was the old Advent House
supportive housing units that were in the taking protective units that were able to preserve those critical units in South Robin. Moving on to our homeownership area, thank you to Peter and his team for all of the efforts. We helped almost 1,300 families buy their first home. We had volume aid of around $406 million. The average loan amount now is $317,000, and we've seen a four-year increase of around 40% in the price of a single-family home. So it speaks to the need for down payment assistance, closing cost assistance in order to help the people that we traditionally help be able to purchase a home in Rhode Island. We've indicated what our numbers look like. Extra assistance, 497 loans that can be used for down payment or closing costs. Our 10K GPA, which is down payment only, 663 loans in that area. And most importantly, our first gen program that we launched this past year, we have closed on 32 grants under that program. 56% of the participants have identified as African Americans. We will be going to trust additional program. Peter and his group successfully added 12 new lenders to participate in our programs. And almost 3,000 people participated in virtual and online, and I think that speaks to where the trend is going now. And I know we have strong advocacy from our nonprofit community to have in-person education, which many would argue that is the way to go, but for people who work and don't have the time to participate in an in-person class, this is a great option. Our development group, thank you to Ian and her team. We've reserved about $4 million in 9% credits, which should fund 431 affordable apartments. 222 of those apartments will be for some of our most vulnerable Rhode Islanders, extremely low-income households. We were one of five HOAs to receive an award under the Capital Magnet Fund, $12 million that, again, we used to target extremely low-income households, correct? And this is our third award under that program. Thank you to Senator Reed for his work on that. Using our one-stop app, we issued an RFP in March for a number of funding sources, some of which come from our colleagues at the state. Thank you to the governor and the legislature for these resources. We've awarded $81 million, which will support 550 affordable units. And we have an RFP out to Cal, which includes our 9% credit. We have $163 million available. Under our Rhode Island Housing Risk Year Refinance Program, we're going to eight developments, 111 affordable units for our elderly disabled, but across the state with Bucket, North Smithfield, Cumberland, Providence. Moving on to leased housing, you heard a lot of this from Jess in her excellent presentation. One thing I'll highlight for this group is that they deployed $212 million in rental assistance. So lots of folks being helped through this group, also our asset management group, our PDCA group, our housing choice voucher. Elizabeth mentioned our continuum of care, $11.8 million being deployed. A 37% increase since 2019, much of that because of Jessica and Elizabeth Fielto and their team member. We have filed an application specifically for unsheltered homeless, $10.1 million. That proposal is pending, and I don't believe we have any timeline on that, correct, Jeff? And Jeff mentioned the Youth Demonstration Programs grant. We expect to serve 159 individuals under that program. Leslie McKnight, you all know, she oversees a very large group of people that are servicing our portfolio and the portfolio of the state of Maine. Over 28,000 loans being serviced by this group. the support that these folks provide for, you know, homeowners in crisis is incredible, particularly during COVID, and they have many tools in their toolkit to be able to do workouts. On the delinquency side, we're up a slight bit in November, but lower than where we were last year at this time. Karen, her team, did an incredible job with our bonding activity over this past year. More than $413 million, both in the single and the multifamily side. Thank you again, Rich, for writing up on. We were in the TBA market for $111 million, around 383 loans. We outperformed where we expected to be. For the past fiscal year, we budgeted an $8 million bottom line, and we achieved a $10 million. Two of the big programs, one a monster program that we administered or are administering on behalf of the state, Rent Relief RI, the Chris, and all of the people that that program. The program closed in March. The last payment was made in September. $275 million total assistance provided, 37,000 households served. The average assistance, about $6,500. We are still implementing the Homeowner Assistance Fund. We launched it in January of 22. We have about $50 million to this program. $30 million in total assistance has gone out for slightly more than 1,000 households. We are going to have to relaunch this program in collaboration with the governor's office because it just wasn't enough to be in. And we've heard this nationally with other HOAs. So one bright spot is maybe homeowners are doing okay. So we have a terrific partnership with the state, again, thanks to the governor and legislature, $210 million in funding being administered, development of affordable housing, which also includes a $10 million set aside for public housing authorities, down payment assistance that we plan to launch in January, a community revitalization program, $5 million of the $25 million for home repair, site acquisition, which at this point is actually oversubscribed based on the amount of applications we have, and middle-income housing. These programs are actually part of the Consolidated Act. On our site acquisition program, as I mentioned, we are oversubscribed, $39 million in the pipeline. We have 14.6 obligated right now for 25 projects, which should create 576 units, and we're slowly closing projects as stated. The Rhode Island Rebound Production Fund, which is the development financing that we receive, $5 million, 13 projects that we will use for the development of 550 units. Great geographic distribution with this program. Middletown, East Greenwich, Tiverton, Lincoln, Jamestown, which is terrific to see communities stepping up and providing in areas where we could have asked for. And lastly, a few 22 highlights of certainly 2023 initiatives that you'll be seeing. Our strategic initiatives, I've got a meeting with the work group, and they are on track for doing some very creative and interesting things. We'll bring the five-year production capital plan to you in January. We're developing new building technologies and reworking our design and construction guidelines. We have implemented ProLink. Mike and working together did a great job in getting this off the ground, and hopefully we can provide good data to all of you moving forward. Our H3C award, we are implementing that. Jess is overseeing that, and it will allow us to connect housing and health. We will be celebrating our 50th anniversary in May of 2023. So we're doing lots of exciting things, including filming all of you. So you have that to look forward to. That's right, you are here. We'll track you down somewhere. DEIB is ongoing. We have leadership trainings today with our consultant, and the PBC agreement, we haven't heard much, but we're moving forward with our regional province to be prepared for that drop. And Marilena has provided you with the team kit.
Thank you. Well, that's a lot.
And I did it very quickly.
Jim, listen to the evening. Anyone else have comments?
I'm going to ask two quick questions. One, just related to the support of housing. In this presentation here, we talked about 754 permanent supportive housing, but earlier you said that we only have 554 households under the supportive housing program. I was just trying to understand if those are different or... probably on page 5, housing services, so 754 permanent supportive housing. And I can follow up afterwards. I'm not trying to, this is kind of like off the cuff. I was just trying to understand what those are.
Yeah. We can check that.
Yeah, we'll check that out. And then the other question is, so in terms of actual units closed here, as opposed to awards, is there a number that we have on here?
Not off the top of my head, but we can provide that to you. And then if we're lucky, we'll have three more closings before December 30th. So
great.
I can provide that to you.
So right now, though, do you anticipate just numbers of closed units?
We actually have closed a lot of deals. Like, I can't give that to you off the top of my head.
Thank you. I just wanted to take this opportunity to ask that. In my role, have the pleasure of serving on dozen boards. And I have contact with literally every state agency. And I can tell you that Rhode Island Housing is one of the highest performing agencies in state government. And I do think it's because of the cohesion that you enjoy, the amount of work that you do. So I wanted to thank you for that. You're doing more now than you've ever done before, and that's great. The challenge is, it's almost like the demand is outstripping the supply. So it's the hurrier I go, the behinder I get. There's a lot of work and a lot of challenges ahead. And as much as you've done, and it's a lot, there's a lot more to do. So it's an exciting time. It's an exciting place to be in an area where there's growing need, because it generally means that the work is challenging, interesting, and you can really make a difference. Why most of us are here. So I wanted to thank you for that, and I'll tell you that I really do appreciate it, because you are making a difference in the lives of the lab. Thank you, Carol. And with that, Jim Thorson speaking again, I move pursuant to Rhode Island General Laws 42-46.5 (a)(1), about that, this public body convene in a closed session to discuss the job performance, contract, and competition with the executive director. Please, I'm looking for a motion and a second.
I don't know.
I don't actually remember that question, but
so many closings that you're dealing with them.
Yes. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of convening in closed session pursuant to General Laws 4246-5A1 to discuss the job performance, contract, and compensation of the Executive Director, please say aye. If you're opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Devigny Cabral?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister?
Aye.
Commissioner Devigny Brim?
Aye.
Commissioner Saul?
Aye.
The motion is approved by unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne.
If I may, this is Corinne speaking. I'd like to note that Carol Ventura, Executive Director, she's been notified in writing that this body intended to convene in closed session to discuss her job performance contract and compensation, and I have not received an objection. Members of the public, you're welcome to remain on the line until the Board of Commissioners returns, but the time frame is uncertain. CJ, if you would kindly mute the line.
doing. We're having fun.
CJ, please mute the line.
Secretary, is the recording continuous?
Yes, we're ready.
Thank you.
So, Corinne, do we need to take a vote to go back into session, or we just...
We do not. We have taken a vote to close the executive session. We're reconvening now in open session.
Can we make a motion to seal the from our closed session?
Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of sealing the minutes of the closed session, please say aye. If you're opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Cabral?
Aye.
Commissioner McCoy?
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
And Commissioner Saul?
Aye.
The motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Corson again. And for that, I'd like to introduce Board Action Number 10, which is approval of Executive Director contract and compensation. The board in this session discussed and has decided to offer an extension of the employment agreement of the Executive Director for a term of 2 years with a salary increase of 3.5% effective January 1, 2023. Do I have a motion for approval?
Motion for approval.
Second, Mr. Steve. So Josh and Steve. Now we'll open it up for discussion. Any discussion, comments, questions? I have some stuff that I'd like to say. In researching this, Rhode Island Housing, as you just heard in a review of 2022, has experienced a period of great growth under Carol's leadership. The number of units newly constructed per year has increased 110% since 2018. The number of multifamily loans closed per year has increased 55% since 2018. The value of multifamily loans in 2021 was 32% higher than 2018. The annual amount of rental assistance Rhode Island Housing administers has increased 16%, not counting the additional emergency COVID rental assistance made available through Rent Relief RI. Rhode Island Housing has administered over $400 million in COVID-related rental and mortgage assistance. The value of RI Housing's mortgage production has increased 9.5% from 2018 to 2021 despite the challenging lending environment. Minority borrowers have increased from 43% to 57% in 2021. COC grant funding has increased 37% since 2019. The total amount of money invested in the local economy in 2021 was $52 million higher than in 2018. These are significant accomplishments that Carol should be quite proud of. We believe that she's doing a good job. In addition to what we believe, others believe that too. I received a letter from Rick Dress, who is the director of the Behavioral Health Developmental Disabilities and Hospitals, in which he says, "Dear Chairman, I respectfully submit this letter to the RI Housing Board of Commissioners in support of Carol Ventura's contract extension as Executive Director of RI Housing. Director Ventura is a pragmatic leader who has dedicated several years to supporting Rhode Islanders and our housing needs. The Director and her team have supported the development of behavioral health care, developmental disabilities, and hospitals, with many initiatives directly impacting some of Rhode Island's most vulnerable populations. Through her collaboration and dedication to our communities, we have built a strong partnership that advocates for all Rhode Islanders. As partners, BHDEH appreciates Director Ventura's innovation surrounding equity and accessibility for the housing needs of our communities and programs. We encourage the board to consider Director Ventura's exemplary leadership and record during her tenure as Executive Director in decisions surrounding her contract renewal. Thank you for your consideration and service. Sincerely, Rick." In addition, I received a letter from Melina Lodge from the Housing Network, in which she writes, "Dear Chairman Thornton, we, the undersigned, respectfully submit this letter to the RI Housing Board of Commissioners in support of Carol Ventura as RI Housing's Executive Director. We understand that the Board intends to take up Director Ventura's contract renewal as a point of business in its December 15 meeting. The signatories of this letter represent a diverse group of RI Housing partners and stakeholders who have observed and been impacted by the positive trajectory of the agency under Carol's leadership since her appointment to Executive Director in September 2019. We wish to attest to these examples of strong leadership that Director Ventura brings to her role, her team, and to RI Housing as the state's primary housing agency. Expanded and deepened partnerships. Under Carol's leadership, RI Housing has expanded the diversity of its community and business partnerships across sectors and strengthened its relationship with existing partners. This is particularly evident in RI Housing efforts over the past 3 years to leverage these critical partnerships and invest in building capacity and technical expertise to create and preserve affordable homes in diverse communities across the state. Sharper focus on innovation, diversity, equity, and accessibility. Carol has actively demonstrated a commitment to driving innovation in development, addressing historical barriers, and to accessing services and homeownership opportunities and promoting environmentally and socially responsible housing that meets the needs of Rhode Islanders. Problem-solving, communication, and respectful dialogue. Carol excels at approaching problems with openness and willingness to solve them. She fosters a transparent environment where people feel heard and, even in disagreement, respected. Carol and her leadership team have demonstrated the ability to often authentically engage with stakeholders, listen to feedback, respond, and work to improve outcomes, process, and communication. This has strengthened RI Housing's public reputation as a community and business partner, and ultimately creates a better environment across the housing sector in which to produce, preserve, and protect housing for all income levels. As partners and stakeholders, we encourage the board to consider Director Ventura's exemplary leadership qualities and record of accomplishments during her tenure as Executive Director in any discussions and decisions about her contract renewal. Director Ventura's longstanding commitment and dedication to advancing impactful and meaningful outcomes is not only an asset to RI Housing, but to Rhode Island as a whole. Sincerely, Melina Lodge, Executive Director. And this is co-signed by a cast of thousands. These are kind words, and I believe them to be true. So I wanted to thank you for that. The board also wishes to express its interest in negotiating performance measures in 6 months that would be mutually acceptable to Carol and to the board. With that, do we have any additional comments or questions?
This is Kevin Owens. I'd just like to add, Carol, you made the whole board look good 3 years ago.
Thank you.
I'm the executive director, so thank you for doing that for us. Just feel like you've done a fantastic job through a very difficult period, and we're very fortunate to have you, and we'll look forward to you staying on here and leading this agency.
I can assure the folks in the audience that those letters are very important to us. We did take them into account. This by no means was a rubber stamp. We had a bold and frank discussion amongst ourselves, and I'm satisfied that we have flogged it adequately. However, I will be having a private conversation with the director and giving her some details and sharing some thoughts later on.
Thank you.
So, did we vote on this yet? I can't remember. we need to take a vote on this, and I think a roll call vote is appropriate in this situation. Corinne, will you help us with that, please?
Thank you. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of approval of the Executive Director's contract and compensation, namely a 2-year term at a 3.5% annual increase, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Cabral?
Aye.
Commissioner Orris?
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
And Commissioner Saul?
Aye.
The motion is approved by unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. We have no more business on our agenda, and I'm looking for my script to make sure that
make
I
a have. Motion to adjourn.
All those in favor?
Thank you.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. The meeting of our Housing Board of Commissioners is now adjourned. Thank you for participating and for all the members who remain for the affordable housing. Please grab a cup.